Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio.
Welcome to the Indie Prem podcast on Indie Live Radio, and this Aberdeen special is because of the march that's going to be taking place. So this is the Friday, the day before the march, and I'm in The Spin, which is a venue where I'm with Rory McPherson, who's a co-chair of iAberdeen.
I've been involved for a couple of years now. I wasn't actually involved at the start, but I actually was at the original event, which funnily enough was wee Ginger Doug, and there was a big turnout that day, and I'm sure there'll be a big turnout tonight as well. Looking forward to it.
Well, give me a bit of a history about before you. What do you know of how the group started and how did you become involved?
Yeah, well, the group was started in 2016. Basically, it was set up a few weeks after the Brexit referendum, when the mandate for a second independence referendum was kind of confirmed in the Holyrood Parliament. So I think they had a few events in 2016, one of them the Wee Ginger Doug, and I got involved probably a few months later, started attending the meetings. I think I was going there for about 6 months. I got voted in as a vice chair, and then after that into the co-chair position. For the last nearly year and a half now, we've been working hard to organise events and various buses across the country to other all under one banner events. A wide range of activities, really, leafleting and surveys and stalls, weekly stalls. So yeah, we're a busy group, and the National actually said we're one of the busiest groups in Scotland. So yeah,
that's something to be proud of. So first of all, I'd like to ask you, how many members do you have, and what sort of attraction do you have of a pull in from an area from Aberdeen?
Okay, so we are based in Aberdeen City. There's also another seven or eight groups in the local area who make up Yes North East. This came about as a request from the Scottish Independence Convention that we kind of join up with other groups in the area, so we put out a call. And it was originally called North East Independence Groups, a kind of working name. We've all kind of got together, we all kind of help each other, but iAberdeen are kind of an Aberdeen specific group. We do have other groups, Yes to Stonehaven and Mearns, I Ellen, ScotRef Peterhead. It's I Banffshire Coast as well, up in the north coast there, and other groups as well. Commonweal Aberdeen are also part of this kind of Yes North East. So yeah, we're doing pretty well. Yeah.
Well, to give listeners an idea of the strength of your group, how many are...
Yeah, the members. I remember you asked me about that. Yeah, so we've got about 30 active members in the group. Now, we kind of, week on week, you know, we've got stalls, we've got other events, leafleting and so on going on. So I reckon there's about 30, you know, active people within the group, members and so on. Then we've got another 250 on our kind of information list. These are mainly people that have turned up at our meetings or events over the last couple of years and have left their contact details. You know, we've also got, I think, 2,500 people on our Facebook page now. That's gone up nearly 1,000 in the last couple of months. There's been a big increase recently. Too sure if it's to do with Boris, but there's also the March and Rally for Independence as well. It's been quite a, you know, it's brought in a lot of attention to our group because we've been assisting with that. So it's been really good all over for the profile of our group, and we've had numerous kind of radio interviews and a couple of the papers as well have been in touch, writing articles about us. Even The Guardian spoke to us the other day. They didn't name the group in particular, as they were doing an article on Inverurie, but we did get a mention in there that we thought that Aberdeen is now a Yes City, justifying that because I think originally in 2014 it was about, you know, 57 to 43, and if you see that the polls have shifted from 45 to 52 or 53 now, I think we're just about there in Aberdeen if they've changed by the same amount, and that's definitely the kind of impression we've been getting from the people we've been speaking to. In fact, a friend of mine recently who was a, he always used to ask me, why should I vote for independence? He just didn't seem to get it. He was surrounded by, you know, Yes supporters in the last referendum, and he was always like, well, I don't see the point. Why should I vote for it? And he came up to me the other day and he says, yeah, I can see why we need to vote for this now. And we basically agreed that, you know, back then it was like a nice to have, but now it's absolutely necessary that we do get the independence and save ourselves from what's going on just now.
Yeah, because I think people throughout Scotland would be interested to hear your story, because obviously with having a Labour Tory council,
yeah,
and you've also got Westminster representation of Tories. What sort of feedback are you getting on the streets, on the stalls, and when you're knocking doors in relation to how people are feeling of how they voted in the past?
Well, to start with, the Labour vote here is finished. the councillor in my ward, Barney Crockett, he came fourth for Labour in Bucksburn, and he still was elected as a councillor, and then he became Lord Provost. And I think we maybe really need to have a think about how we do our council, you know, elections, because if fourth best in Bucksburn, my local area, equals Lord Provost, then, you know, we're just rewarding parties that aren't really getting much of the vote at all. The main seems to be an SNP Tory thing here. What's happened is the Labour vote seems to have split and gone to one or the other. Obviously, in 2011, it was all SNP. Every single MSP was SNP in the whole North East area, plus one on the list, which is pretty impossible when you consider their vote would have been divided by 10 or something. So to get that seat, so I think it did swing over to the Tories in 2017, but I think that was on the back of folk voting Tory for Brexit rather than for Ruth Davidson, or rather than anti-independence. And I think why I realised that all of a sudden is because you see that the recent election, the European election, the Tory vote was split between them and the Brexit party. So the Brexit lot have now jumped off and left the Tory party sitting on 11% like it was previously. And these folk are the kind of, you know, that's why they were voting with them that time and so on. So I feel like they're on the slide here as well. So I would expect the SNP to clear up here if there's a general election. But I mean, the Green Party are active here as well. The Greens are actually part of the North East Yes groups as well. And I know Guy was trying to go for the co-convener as well, so I think they're trying to raise their profile in the area as well.
Yeah, very good. Now, obviously, tomorrow is the big day. How do you feel about having the march come to Aberdeen, and what's your group's involvement been?
Well, this march has been a long time in the planning. I think it was announced over a year ago, to the point where people thought that it was happening in 2 weeks a year ago, because it was, say, the 1st of August 2018, and the march was down as the 17th of August. So they were like, why is it happening so soon? But the reality was it was actually announced over a year in advance. And we did get input on the route from the start. We felt that based on previous marches, you know, starting in large open areas and ending in parks, that the best route would be Castlegate to Duthie Park, straight up Union Street. The most visual route in the entire city. The council had a bit of feedback on that and basically said that the standard route in Aberdeen is Alban Place to Castlegate. Can you accept that? And I think we then had a meeting. This is moving on a few months to maybe a couple of months ago. And it was decided by the majority at the meeting in Aberdeen, of folk from Aberdeen, that the best route would be from Alban Place up to the beach, because it was a wide open space, you know, plenty of room for 20,000-30,000 even. You know, and there's lots of facilities nearby as well. The route for that does take you straight through a roundabout with three dual carriageways and a couple of side roads as well. And I did at the time think, I doubt the council are going to let us do this. And so happens that at the meeting with the council, it was the council were robustly defending the proposal to end the march at Castlegate. I think the police were also saying something similar and basically saying that a traffic order would be about 4,500. As opposed to the 1,000 plus police costs that they were wanting to charge for the standard route. I suppose you could question why they're wanting £1,000 for a temporary traffic restriction order when it's the standard route. You know, the paperwork and all the planning should all be there. It's just a case of policing it, and the police cost is separate. I know that's a couple of £1,000 as well. But we've been kept up to date with these discussions. We've put representatives along to the meetings with the council as well, and I think there's been a robust debate in there. But at the end of the day, I think all under one banner have accepted the route that the council have proposed. The council have then given permission with conditions, and the march will go ahead. We've been able to, you know, only have two days' notice that it's been officially, you know, given the go-ahead. But I think what we have to remember is every other march has had some sort of issue, and every other march has gone on at the advertised time, and it's gone on without a hitch, and everything, you know, on the day has been perfect almost. You know, so I think that's what we had to believe for Aberdeen, and that's where we're standing now Friday evening. I believe everything is now set and ready, and it's going to be a good day tomorrow.
How aware do you think the public of Aberdeen are in relation to knowing that the march is going ahead? Has been plenty of publicity in the local media and radio, TV and the press?
Yes, we put out some information, kind of press release a week ago, basically offering, you know, advice and information and offering to do interviews. And we did get a couple of the Press and Journal, we did an interview with them, that made the paper as part of a larger article. North Sound Radio were very keen for us to speak, and I think they did an 18-minute interview with me, and we ended up with a 30-second kind of condensed edition of that, basically repeated every half an hour for a whole day last Tuesday. So, I mean, obviously the issues with the council and the council meeting and Thursday have also been, sorry, I think it was Wednesday, that's also been, you know, all over the papers and so on. So I do believe people in Aberdeen know about it. There's been posters put up. We've been holding photo shoots with large banners and trying to share them online. We've been getting a reasonable amount of reach with this. And I think we've certainly gone out to over 100,000 people over the last month in terms of Facebook reach on our page. So I think we have got quite a good awareness of the march.
I saw the banners, the banner pictures myself, so it reached my place. Yeah. So numbers, any idea or expectation of numbers for the march?
What we've got on the Facebook page, compare that to similar marches last year and perhaps Oban as well, talking about Dundee and Inverness and where we are in terms of what we have on Facebook, and also all under Rod Banner, they've got about 45,000 people on their Facebook as well. And then you've got your Twitter and your other means of, you know, communication and advertising. I would expect there would be between 15 and 20,000 people tomorrow. I base that on the fact that there was, you know, about 7,000 in Oban, and that surprised me. You know, there was a lot of people in Oban. It was very difficult to get to Oban. I don't know how people got to Campbelltown, but for us it was a 5-hour drive to Oban. And we did that in the morning, and it was a brilliant day, and it was, you know, until the rain started. But luckily it was in a...
Tell me about it. I was drenched.
It was in a shinty stadium with a large stand, so we all managed to get under there. Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, for a small town like Oban to have that amount of people turn up, I think it shows that there is, you know, an appetite there for independence. And you know, I don't think so many people travel to Oban. You know, a lot of people were generally from that area. And I think that's what we try to do in Aberdeen. We've tried to really push this in the Aberdeen area and get the publicity out. And I think we've reached probably as many people as we can.
And it's going to be good for trade.
It should be, yeah. The Castlegate, there's a few bars there and so on. There's Wetherspoons.
Yeah, but there's also a lot of hotel accommodation, bed and breakfast being used up.
Certainly, yeah. They were selling hotels in Aberdeen are quite quiet the weekend. You could have got a ticket for a hotel bedroom for about £25 a couple of months ago, but I think it shot right up. We went to rebook, and I think we paid three times as much as that for some of our performers tomorrow night. So, yeah, I think it'll be good for business here as well, yeah.
So you've organised an after march too?
Yes, as well as the Friday night evening event, we've got an after march and rally party, basically down at the Tunnels. It's a well-known music venue in Aberdeen. It's immediately below St Nicholas Square. It's if you think of Edinburgh and the Vaults, it's kind of like that. It's kitted out as a venue, a brilliant sound system in there. The music, it will consist of kind of pro-independence bands, and also the pipe band will be making an appearance as well. It's from 7:30 to 1:00 in the morning. There's about 4 or 5 bands booked, and the pipe band, like I said, tickets are £5. We've priced it competitively, you know, to try and fill the venue. We've already sold over 130 tickets. The online ticket sales have now closed, but we can accept payment on the door. There are likely to be plenty of tickets available. It's capacity was 200, but we've been moved to the larger tunnel now, so we can have up to 300 people there. So there won't be, you know, we don't expect anybody to be turned away. So just turn up and enjoy the night.
Great. Well, thanks very much indeed, Rory, and look forward to speaking to you possibly tomorrow and get some feedback of how you felt the march has gone. And I'm really looking forward to it myself. Thank you very much.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for that.
Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio.
With me now at The Spin is Emma Forbes, and she is the social media organiser for iAberdeen, but she's also taken on another post, and that's events organiser.
Yep, that's right. It's been quite busy.
So tell me about your involvement within the group and what the work involves.
Okay, so I've been involved with the group for probably a little over 2 years now. We've now getting very busy. We've been organising lots of events. Last few months we've been concentrating on the big March of Independence in Aberdeen, so it's made us a lot busier. Current political situation has made, we've had a sudden influx of new members, more interest. Our stalls are like being really successful now. We're now doing those every week.
How many people would normally turn up each time from the group on a stall?
So I would say like last year we were sort of struggling getting volunteers to do this stall. So we were doing it maybe like once every couple of weeks. But now we've got quite a lot of volunteers now. We've actually got probably too many volunteers. I wouldn't say too many, but
never have too many.
Yeah, we have like plenty of volunteers. We're doing the stall almost every week now. We're now getting a lot more interest, people coming to talk to the stall, a lot of people telling us stories about how they were no voters and they're now yes voters.
That's a great compilation. I'd love to stand on a stand with you and get those sort of feedback, because I'm based in Bears Den and we just don't get that sort of feedback. So what sort of literature do you normally keep on the stall?
We have all sorts of leaflets. We use quite a lot of the indie poster boy ones, and we've also made quite a few of our own ones where we've just kind of taken information from what all sorts of sources like Indie Poster Boy and taking what we think is relevant to the area and sort of collaborated them together to make sort of big leaflets. Anything from infographics to more detailed things about the consequences of maybe Brexit, the NHS, financial pensions are always sort of topics that we've been concentrating on.
Yeah. On the social media side promotion, what do you use? I take it obviously Facebook, Twitter, anything else?
So we have Instagram as well. So I'm not the best at taking pictures, but I've been taking pictures of the stall when I can, any events. I think we've only got about 250 followers on Instagram at the moment, but it's getting there.
Do you find that the fact of social media is more for bringing the group together or informing locals?
I think it's good for actually informing locals that know that we exist. So we're not looking to convert anyone through social media, but getting our name out there. So if anyone who does feel like they want to do something more can approach us and come and help in whichever way they want to.
Do you actually find that, I take it you give them an email address to contact or contact you through Twitter. Do you ever get much in the way of response?
Yeah, definitely we get messages through our Facebook, especially the last couple of weeks. It's been that I've had my phone constantly. There's a message from someone asking whether it's they're looking for flags or they're asking about the march or they're asking about leaflets or how they can help. It's just been, yeah, non-stop.
And how do you feel about the march coming to Aberdeen?
I'm very excited about it. Been very, very busy, especially the last month. It's been constant, non-stop. I think some of us have been putting a few hours of work of this every day. We've got obviously the event tonight with the Bee Ginger Dog, so we were hoping for probably about 100 people are going to be turning up to that. Tomorrow night we have our after party, so we're hoping to get maybe 300 people into that. So I've been organising all the bands to come together, and we've been also trying to source speakers for the rally, just trying to show off Aberdeen as best we can.
Yeah. And is the stage full for tomorrow for the rally itself?
For the rally, I believe so. Everything's been quite last minute with that. It's quite hard to keep up. But yeah, we definitely have quite a few speakers and a few solo acts and stuff coming to do that.
Well, I look forward to reporting on the event after. I'm looking forward to it very much indeed. But for now, Emma Forbes, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
Indie Prime is Indie Prime on Indie Live Radio. Well, welcome to the Indie Prime podcast on Indie Live Radio, and my guest today is Paul Kavanagh.
Hello.
Nice to see you again, Paul.
Hey there.
Thanks for coming in and giving an update on the current situation. Right, looking at the news, what's been going on of late? If we look at so far as the independent side, first of all, Plan B. Plan B has been generated quite a lot of interest on social media, but it's also got knocked back. It was a proposal by Angus Brendan McNeill and Chris McElney. What's your thoughts on what you've...
Well, I've always said, I don't think we're at the end of the Section 30 order road yet. I think there's still some mileage to go there in terms of pressurising Westminster to authorise a Section 30 order and have a referendum. The moment they're saying no, 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 but I think the political landscape will change if, as is widely predicted, there's a snap general election. and the SNP perform well in that, which is what the opinion polls are saying that they would do. So if they, that would change the political landscape, and it would also change the political narrative, because it would mean that, you know, what they're saying at the moment is, oh, but the SNP lost seats in 2017, and, you know, they're denying that there's a mandate in Holyrood. And if the SNP perform very strongly, a snap general election that later this year or early next year, it then becomes very difficult for them to say that there's no momentum and there's no desire in Scotland to have an independence referendum. So politically, it increases the pressure on them. It might even be the case that, you know, the SNP, if there's another hung parliament, which is a possibility, then the SNP could be in a stronger position in terms of bargaining. I very much doubt they would go into a formal coalition with any of the other parties. They certainly wouldn't make a deal with the Tories, but they might enter into some sort of confidence and supply arrangement with the Labour Party, and as a condition of that, you know, obviously they would want an independence referendum. Alternatively, a weak Boris Johnson government after a snap general election might be... Boris Johnson's always struck me as the kind of Tory politician that he has no scruples, you know. Mm-hmm. So he's always struck me as the kind of, precisely the kind of English nationalist Tory politician who would be prepared to see Scotland go because it would strengthen his position in England. And I think he could probably pull that one off with very little political damage to himself, given that the opinion polls are all showing that Conservative voters would, they see Brexit as a priority rather than keeping the United Kingdom together. So I think he could possibly manage that without any great political damage, as long as he could assure himself that, you know, various other conditions might be met. So I think, like I says, we're not at the end of the Section 30 order road. There's quite some way to travel on it. Everything's going to change with the snap general election. But having said all that, I do think there's a lot of merit in a plan B, because paradoxically, the greater support there is for independence in Scotland, the more reluctant a Westminster government is going to be to allow a Section 30 order, because it means that they're going to lose. David Cameron agreed to the Section 30 order in 2012 with Alex Salmond, the Edinburgh Agreement, because Cameron thought in his arrogance that he could get 70% in a no vote. I mean, that's what they were predicting at the time. They could get 70% or more. The opinion polls at the time were showing support for independence hovering around about the sub 30% mark. So that wasn't an unreasonable prediction at the time. We're now going to go into an independence referendum with support, you know,
52%.
52%, you know, a slight majority in favour of independence. And that's, I mean, it was always said that, you know, support for, it was always expected that support for independence would rise if two things happened. One of them being a Boris Johnson government and the other one being Brexit. And only one of those things has happened and we have an independence majority. So when the other one happens, assuming that it does, I think we would see another rise in support for independence. I would certainly expect to see that. So on... Like, even though, despite the fact that I've said that Boris Johnson isn't the kind of politician who would prioritise keeping the United Kingdom together, I do think that any Westminster, you know, government, they're not going to want to be the government whose legacy is ending the United Kingdom.
Yep.
So, and they'll want to try and avoid that. So, paradoxically, a rise in support for independence makes it harder to get a Section 30 order. So that means that we do need some
vehicle to,
some way of forcing their hand, you know, and I think that's where the plan B comes in, because it's a way of saying to, I think I've always said this, you know, that when you're dealing with a bully, and it's dealings with Scotland, Westminster is a bully, you know, you don't negotiate with bullies, you present them with a fait accompli. You don't say, you know, I want to negotiate with you. You say, this is what's going to happen, you know, and you can't stop it. So that's where I think there's a lot of merit in a plan B.
Right. The original plan that was put forward was for a debate at the conference was knocked back because on the grounds that it hadn't been widely discussed with the membership. Chris McElney has come back and said, well, you know, neither was...
Brexit. For example,
either was Brexit or
supporting a Brexit referendum.
Or a second Brexit referendum was announced to the membership on the Andrew Marr show. So, you know, they've come back now with an amended point for debate as an amendment.
Well, there's certainly a lot of support for that amongst the grassroots of the independence movement. I mean, amongst people that I speak to.
And an increasing number of SNP branches and SNP MPs. And
there is a growing sense of frustration, you know, that we need to kind of strike while the iron is hot, as it were. And there is, like I said, a growing sense of frustration with the caution and small-c conservatism of the SNP leadership. Mm. So I think anything that can kind of put pressure on them to act is a good thing from the point of view of independence. Yep. So yeah, like I said, I do think that there's a lot of merit in a Plan B, though I would say that, you know, we're not
there.
Well, it is a Plan B for a reason. Yeah, it's not a Plan A. You know?
Correct. What's your thoughts on how things have been working with the Labour Party over the last couple of weeks?
What do you mean working?
Not working.
I'm not working with the Labour Party.
Yes, I would. We'd be before a referendum and we wouldn't get in its way. Oh, we're voted against.
Well, I think what we're witnessing is the final death throes of the Labour Party in Scotland, really. There were rumours that Richard, what's his name?
Leonard.
Is it Leopard? Leotard? Lap dancer, lip smacker, whatever his name is, him. There were rumours that he was considering his position.
Correct.
I don't know if he's considered it or not.
Well, I was looking for it today, actually.
I didn't see anything today.
But
so
what I did see today is that I believe they're looking at property in Crow Road in the West End as a potential office base for a Scottish Labour Party.
Right, a new party?
Yeah.
Mm. See, it's funny how, like, the Tories, both the Scottish Tories under Ruth Davidson and the Labour Party in Scotland, they think that, you know, they're quite happy with independence for themselves, but they're not. Yeah. They don't want independence for Scotland.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just a slight shade of hypocrisy there, people.
Very much so, indeed.
But no, the Labour Party are... I don't really understand this vehement British nationalism that infests the Labour Party in Scotland, because I mean, like that opinion poll that showed 52% of people want independence also showed that 40% of Labour voters support independence.
Yeah.
So they're alienating
their own members,
a large part of their own support.
Yeah.
You know, and when you are languishing in the opinion polls as it is.
Yeah.
You know, the way to regain your position isn't to try and out-Tory the Tories on support for the United Kingdom. You know, I just don't see what they're aiming for here. I honestly don't understand. I don't think they have a strategy. Yeah. I think they have infighting, is what they have.
Yep.
And they're so consumed. The only people that the Labour Party in Scotland hate more than the SNP is other members of the Labour Party in Scotland. You know, they loathe one another. You know, and it's a deeply unhealthy state of affairs. And I think it's born out of, well, they had generations, literally generations of entitlement in Labour. It didn't matter what they said, didn't matter what they did. They weighed the Labour vote, you know, and
that chip is still on their shoulder.
Oh, totally, yeah, totally. And they still talk about winning back their seats.
And becoming First Minister.
Yeah, they still talk, I mean, as though somehow, you know, the seats that they've lost were somehow theirs by right. And, you know, it's them to win it back. But, you know, the Scottish political landscape has changed utterly. And Labour just hasn't adapted to it at all. You know, they're still stuck in this kind of the dinosaur era of the 1980s in a lot of ways, the Labour Party in Scotland.
And even when it comes to Brexit, if you look at the main party down at Westminster.
Well, what is the policy on Brexit?
Exactly, they're sat on the fence so much they're actually willing to destroy the livelihoods of many of their actual voters and members.
Yeah, and that's the problem. They're so... They want to be all things to all people and they end up being nothing to anybody.
Yeah. And then you look at the Lib Dems. Liberal Democrat. They're not liberal and they're definitely not Democrat when they're refusing a mandate
Well, you just say that because you love your own MP so much, don't you, Ray?
But she is a hypocrite.
This is Joe Swinson's constituency.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's completely a hypocrite. Yeah. You know, she's, oh. But then so is...
I've called her out in person. Yeah. When I caught her out with a lie, I've told her, you're a liar.
Yeah, she's... Yeah. I mean, it's you can't on the one hand say that you want another EU referendum because the first one was conducted on the basis of lies and misinformation, and say that you're not allowing another Scottish independence referendum.
When so much has changed
when
since.
It was conducted on the basis of lies and misinformation. Yeah. So it's deeply, deeply hypocritical of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Ian Murray said that when he was interviewed on Channel 4 News last week. And he said, you know, oh no, that was done and dusted in 2014. We're not having another Scottish independence referendum. And then what about an EU referendum? Oh yes, because the campaign was fought on the basis of lies.
Yeah.
It's like, really? You don't say? You know, so they're just totally, totally hypocritical. And I think the SNP needs to do more to expose their hypocrisy on that particular issue.
Absolutely, because things have gone quiet against the Lib Dems of late. Yeah. And I think one of the things that have taken the radar off either Labour, Brexit or the Lib Dems in Scotland has been the announcement of the thought of a Wings party.
Well, I wouldn't say there's an announcement. I think it's more kite flying, to be honest, really.
See what the reaction would be. Yeah. And stir them up.
Yeah.
Take some focus of attention.
And I think it's premature. Mm-hmm. I really think it's premature. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not... I would say that was Plan C. I mean, we've talked about Plan A, you know, which is getting the Section 30 order. We're talking about Plan B, you know, but I'd say that was Plan C, you know. So I'm not entirely sure that it's a wise idea at this particular juncture.
Because I think there's, when you look at the Dohoit system and you look at that, he has got a valid point to make in relation to the votes being lost, but they still gain seats, and it could. And I also, I've looked at the various blogs of, say, James Kelly, and also makes a lot of sense.
See, the only way I think it would work, I kind of proposed something similar to this a while back, and it would have to be very carefully thought out in order to make sure you're not meeting with any objections from the Electoral Commission. But the only way I can conceive this actually working would be if there was some sort of pan-yes alliance, as it were, right? And that would have to involve the SNP, and it would have to involve the Greens, and it would have to involve the Socialists, and it would have to involve people, non-party political figures within the independence movement as well.
Right, and that's an interesting point.
It would mean that movement would say, right, to the SNP, you stand in the constituency seats because you can win there, and not stand in the list.
Yeah.
You know?
So this could be...
And that would then mean that seats in the list... You know, votes for SNP in the constituencies wouldn't count against this pan-yes alliance and the list. And that way we could maximise it. But that would involve far more willingness to concede from the SNP leadership that we've seen hitherto, you know, and they are notoriously, well, control freakish, I would have to say. So I don't know if that's even a start of that idea, but that's the only way I could actually see that working.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because the word comfortable comes to mind, which is
the point is that I think anybody that's any party, yes party, it has to be a single issue party.
Yep.
You know, it has to be focused on the one question of getting an independence referendum through Parliament. That's what it's about, and not have additional policies on other matters which are going to prove a distraction from that.
Yeah, so it's literally just calling the shots on one manifesto pledge, exactly. And it's independence.
And I think that's the only way it could have any chance of success.
So how difficult do you think it would be to bring, for example, the National Yes Registry is through the Indie app has got communication through all the Yes groups in Scotland. You've got the Scottish Independence Foundation, Scottish Independence Convention. Yeah.
Probably very difficult because it's like herd of bloody cats.
Yeah,
trying to get to agree on anything.
Yeah,
I mean, this is all
pie in the sky.
I think it's hypothetical.
Yeah,
because I think we're a long way from that just yet.
I think we're a long way, but it's something that there's no problem in actually having a discussion about it.
No, there's no issue about having a discussion about it whatsoever.
And unionists who would be inclined to just go on the list, because the only way of getting into Parliament would be freaking out. And that's no bad thing.
Yeah. But like I said, it's not it's something that would have to be thought out very carefully. It's not something that I think should be the preserve of any single blogger, no matter how prominent they are. You know, I think it's something that needs to be a lot more broadly based within the independence movement.
Yeah.
So it's certainly an idea which has merit. I wouldn't rule it out of hand, but I do think it's premature. Yep. Because I think what we need to be concentrating on at the moment is there's going to be an early general election. And that's looking... I mean, the Boris Johnson government is looking highly unstable. You know, just today, I think it was 20 Tory MPs are threatening to bring him down.
Yep.
You know, led by Philip Hammond. So it's not looking likely that government is going to be able to remain in office. You know, there's all the other thing that's happened today is that the Speaker of the Parliament, the Speaker of the House, John Bercow, has said that he's not going to allow Parliament to be suspended so that, you know, Boris Johnson can ram through a no-deal Brexit without the consent of Parliament. There's also a court case going on, which Joanna Cherry is one of the leading lights in, and it's also involved with Ian Murray and various other people, going through the Scottish courts in order to rule that as illegal,
yep,
that Boris Johnson can try and, you know, ram through a no-deal Brexit without the consent of Parliament. So there's all sorts of ways in which his government has been attacked on lots of various fronts, and it's looking very so I honestly don't think that it's a government which is going to be able to last very long in office, given the forces that are ranging against it. So I do think that we are in for an early general election, because that's the only way that we can change things. It's only going to be, it's either that or it's another EU referendum, which Boris Johnson certainly will not countenance. So it's either that or it's a general election. Because obviously in an EU referendum, he has to get 50% of the vote, whereas in the first-past-the-post system, he only needs to get 30%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's obviously the calculations that they're making in the Tory party. So from the point of view of independence, that's what we need to concentrate on at the moment. Everything else is like we're planning for what comes next, but we can't really plan for what comes next because we don't know what's going to happen following that likely early general election.
If there was a general election, snap general election called, how do you feel the manifesto contents should be?
Well, the SNP have to campaign on a strong mandate for an independence referendum. They have to. They can't. The mistake that they made, and we're talking to various people within the party, I think it's a mistake they won't be repeating. The mistake that they made in 2017, despite what the likes of Joe Swinson and Ian Murray are trying to claim now, the SNP did not fight that general election on the basis of independence. They were trying desperately to shy away from talking about independence, is what they were trying to do. And what the outcome of that was, that people who don't want independence were motivated to get out and vote for Ruth Davidson, but people who support independence weren't motivated to go out and support the SNP. And as a result, the SNP vote fell.
Yep.
You know, so they lost seats. I think, and also, of course, we had we were in peak Jeremy Corbyn mania at the time as well.
Glastonbury. You
know? Exactly. And we saw a kind of a resurgence in support for Labour in various, you know, seats. I mean, the majority of my MP, David Landon in Glasgow East, that was slashed. You know, and he scraped in.
Yeah.
You know, I think if there's going to be an election now, I think Labour would struggle badly. And I would expect David to be returned with an increased majority. You know, and I certainly would expect the SNP, they have 35 seats at the moment, and I would certainly expect to see them in the high 40s. You know, that's what, at least 45, I would say. They have to get 45 seats. If they get 45 seats, they increase their seat representation by 10, no one can dispute that there is a strong mandate in Scotland for an independence referendum, and that's going to change the political calculations.
I'd like to cover an area which actually wasn't one of the SNP's gains in 2015, and that's Shetland. Really? The simple reason we've got a by-election coming up there.
That's for Holyrood.
Yeah, I know. Aye. But what I'm getting at is, what sort of message would that ring out if Tom Wills won for the SNP?
Oh, that'd be incredible. I doubt it's going to happen, I'll be honest with you. But it would be an incredible victory for the SNP, because that is a Lib Dem stronghold, and it always has been. Mm-hmm. So I
think the equation would totally change, I think, if he won up there.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if he did, though. Yeah. I will be honest with you. I'd be very surprised if the SNP won Shetland. But we shall see.
We shall wait and see.
Nothing can be predicted in British politics anymore.
In the past, it's been a case since Ruth Watson started the Keep Scotland the Brand campaign about Union Jackery. But that's now reaching the media a lot more, rather than social media. It's reaching the mainstream media, because it's been getting more obvious from a lot of businesses. Saw a report in the National regarding Asda getting caught out using a reference for English and Welsh food, not Scottish, etc. What's your thoughts on the Union Jackery side?
Well, it's the only strategy that the British government has got left to save the United Kingdom. I mean, that's essentially what this beefed up Scotland office is
beefed up.
Well, it's about plastering. It's about plastering Union Jacks on things, you know. So, I think it's a symptom of marketing. Scotland, we have, because we're not an independent country, right? We have in this country large businesses, chains, which are answerable to a head office somewhere in England, right? In England, you can put Union Jacks on produce, and it's not seen as political in the way it is in Scotland.
Yeah.
And in Scotland, the fact that it is highly politicised, putting union flags on things, that doesn't register with a head office in England, which is making decisions on a UK-wide basis. Whereas, of course, they wouldn't do that in Ireland, because Ireland is an independent country, and are very aware of, you know, that because Ireland's an independent country, they have to have a separate, even though they might Tesco or whoever operate in Ireland as well, they have to have a separate head office for their Irish operations, and they would be in charge of those kind of decisions within the territory of Ireland. Mm-hmm. And it's a symptom of the fact that we don't have that in Scotland. So they're making marketing decisions which aren't necessarily appropriate for a Scottish market, but they are appropriate on they're made by head offices in England who don't see, they're not really sensitive to Scottish sensibilities.
Mm-hmm. Right, I'd like to throw a question to you about a subject which I've not seen you write about, but again, it's something that's just hit the news, is the Ferguson's shipyard in Greenock. The potential that it could be nationalised by the Scottish government.
Oh, yeah.
Because these the islands depend on a constant supply of reliable ferries, and so many of them are, built in the 1980s, 1985.
Well, I'll be honest, I don't
know much about it. So, no thoughts on that?
Think I don't have any great issue with nationalising things. I think that's a good idea.
Right. That's the point I was getting at.
I would nationalise the railways as well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm at it. I've got far more strong opinions on the nationalising of the railways.
Why is that?
Because I like trains.
But if
it saves jobs, that's what it's about. Yep. And protects jobs in Scotland, that's got to be a good thing. And yeah, of course, in Scotland we need, we need ferries, we need shipbuilding. We are a maritime nation.
Yeah.
And other countries have been far more successful in protecting that than we have in Scotland, where the tendency has always been to rely on MOD contracts, which I think is unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about something unhealthy, which is back on familiar ground, what do you feel about the Tory MSP's tweet the other day regarding so nice to get to Ibrox again and beat a team in green?
Yeah, what team was was he talking about?
Do you know what? I don't know.
Because I hate football.
I follow Liverpool.
I've always thought football was 22 millionaires ruining a perfectly good lawn.
Well, it wasn't Celtic.
I know it wasn't Celtic. I don't know who it was.
I don't know if it was Hibs. Or
I have no idea who it was. Yeah. But it's that kind
it's not needed.
Petty dog whistle sectarianism, you know, and that's really what the Tories are all about these days. They're about appealing to that segment of the Scottish population.
Yeah.
You know, and it's why I've always said that the Tories, I mean, during, you know, back when they, you know, the last election when the Tories increased their vote and that, and I always thought that was peak Ruth. Yeah. Because there's only so many people in Scotland that that kind of messaging appeals to. The Tories are pitching their appeal to that segment of the Scottish population, which it doesn't matter if you could prove to them that everybody in Scotland would win the lottery every week and, you know, we would have free Chinese takeaways and curries for the rest of our lives in an independent Scotland, they would still vote no. You know, there's people in Scotland, it doesn't matter, you know, even if Scotland, you could prove to them conclusively that everybody in Scotland would be better off financially as a result of independence, they would still vote no. Yeah. And there's that block of population, and amongst that segment of the Scottish population, there is a strong strain of sectarianism, and the Tories are appealing to that.
Which had its history from hundreds and hundreds of years
ago. Well, yeah, and I've always said sectarianism in Scotland is really a disease of British nationalism, essentially. You know, people say, oh, both sides are just as bad, but what you get on the Catholic side is really a reaction against that discrimination which was institutionalised in Scotland by those in power for a long, long time. And what we're seeing now is something that's very much... it's very much a shadow of its former self. It doesn't have the appeal that it used to have. It doesn't have the power that it used to have. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of Scottish people no longer want anything to do with that and don't want to be identified that way. But there is still that remnant, and that's who the Tories are appealing to, you know. Yeah. And I think it is reprehensible of them, to put it mildly, that they're doing that.
Ireland or stroke Northern Ireland's been off the radar a little bit for a while. It's suddenly gone very quiet. It's not in the news so much, no one talking about either a potential to be a vote for unification or powers going back to Stormont. What do you think the situation is? Because no one's talking about it. It doesn't mean that nothing's happening.
Well, it's not. Again, it's not something I've been following especially closely. Mm-hmm. But I think at some point there has to be a referendum on unification in Ireland. You know, and someday, I mean, I've had family in Northern Ireland, and it's always been a kind of article of faith, literally. Ireland should be unified one day, and I think Brexit might well prove to be the final straw as far as a lot of people in the North are concerned, you know, because their arguments for avoiding, you know, because when Ireland was partitioned, the North was the economic powerhouse, you know, and now it's far, you know, it's far poorer economically, performing far worse economically than the rest of Ireland is. So, so those arguments have been turned on their head, you know. But again, you're talking about that kind of tribalism that, you know, the Tories are trying to appeal to with their dog whistle. Dog whistles about you, you know, about football teams in green. So it's very difficult to predict because people don't always vote in their own economic interests. Certainly we saw with the Brexit vote, you know, people didn't vote in what was in their own economic interest. They voted for other motivations. So it would certainly be the same with Northern Ireland. But just as the demographics of Scottish independence are moving Scotland in an ever more pro-independence direction, so the demographics of Northern Ireland are moving Northern Ireland ever more gradually in favour of unification. So I think it will happen eventually.
Yeah. Anything in the grassroots movement that you'd like to discuss, positive or negative, going forward at the moment?
Yeah, I've just been quite busy with lots of talks all over. I was doing a talk in Edinburgh on Sunday for the Yes Hub in Edinburgh South, so... And I'm getting it seems like every day I'm getting asked to speak somewhere else. So there's certainly a lot of activity going on. But there's this growing sense of frustration, I would say, amongst people in the grassroots movement that we really want something to happen.
Yeah.
you know, and
it's not going to really happen until we know the outcome as far as
well. No, Brexit, it's not going to happen until
just,
Brexit.
We've just got to, you know, it's, play
it's,
the all,
it's
game.
Brexit, and it's we really do. We just have to wait and see what happens with Brexit. I mean, I don't think Brexit will automatically by itself create Scottish independence, but it will make a lot more people receptive to pro-independence arguments, and we've seen that with Boris Johnson becoming Prime Minister, you know. And what's striking about that, and it was, you saw it with the Progress Scotland stuff as well, about talking to people who've moved from no to yes, that they weren't being shifted because all of a sudden they were convinced by the SNP. It wasn't that all of a sudden they thought Nicola Sturgeon was wonderful. It wasn't because they were all of a sudden convinced by the economic arguments for yes. It's because they were so pissed off with Brexit and the utter rank incompetence of the British state. But that means that we have to make sure that those people become as convinced by the arguments in favour of independence as we are. You know, they're there now, they want to vote yes, but they're voting yes for negative reasons. Mm-hmm. And we have to make sure that they have positive reasons for doing it as well. So we have to work to do to make sure that that change in opinion becomes a permanent change in opinion. So we can't take it for granted. I do expect that if we get a no-deal Brexit, that independence support will rise even further. I think it's not unreasonable now to hope for a 60% vote in an independence referendum. I'd be very, very happy with that. And I think that's achievable. But we have a lot of work to do. So,
looking at the, shall we say, the other side of the border, listening to and reading about reports in the media, I've been listening to a few of the programmes, but quite a lot of content now on the independences, and they're singing the same old songs.
Yes, they're panicked because there was that poll.
Yeah,
that's really what it is. It's like, oh my God, they're going to vote yes. You know, and that's concentrated some minds. You know, that has made them, oh shit, we can't take this for granted anymore, because that was always what they were doing. It was like, let's just take Scotland for granted. So now what they're desperately trying to do is to avoid having an independence referendum, because they're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know that now, they're going to lose it. So that's where they are at the moment. It's like, let's just try and stop an independence referendum from happening, and then maybe it will all just go away. You know, that's where they are at the moment.
Cloud Cuckoo Clans. Yeah. It's never going to happen.
No, it's not going to go away. Yeah. It's not going to go away.
Any other points you'd like to speak about, Paul? Anything out on your own personal agenda? Or
well, I'm work-wise? Up to my arse in paperwork for the Home Office at the moment.
Oh,
trying
right.
to get a visa for my husband to come over to live in. He's an American citizen, so we're trying to get the paperwork together to get him to come over to live here. I have got 3 folders full of paperwork, which is about 2 inches thick. It's just last night I had to print off 105 sheets of paper proving chat logs. It's incredible what you've got to. It's a nightmare, and I've only just started.
That's a big learning curve.
So yeah,
but also it'll arm you with the information that you know that you can then write about in relation to the immigration
situation. In this country is just horrendous. So I'm hoping, touch wood, you know, that will go smoothly, but you just hear so many horror stories.
Right, thanks, Paul.
All right,
great to have another chat again.
All right,
great. And look, until the next time.
All right, bye.
Indie Prime, Indie Prime on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime.